The Russian invasion of Ukraine is our topic right now during this portion of Vocal Point. Our guest is Tim Head, who's the executive director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And note what Tim Head says. He says the U.S. has a foreign policy nightmare on its hands in Ukraine. Tim, welcome back to the program. Thanks again for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me and talking about this important issue.
Okay. First of all, do you think that Putin would have done this if Trump had been in the White House still?
Well, frankly, the only changed variable in the equation from, you know, a year ago, frankly, for the last 5 or 6 years, is just a different White House. There's no significant change in the Russian configuration, no change in the Ukrainian situation, just a different White House. And so, you know, the opportunity or the kind of desire has certainly been there all during the Trump administration. But the fact that, you know, A, we obviously have a different White House, and B, that has emboldened. Well, you also have to bear in mind that, you know, the calamity around Afghanistan, the America's pullout last August, July and August, mm-hmm. Clearly has emboldened at the moment Russia, and we'll see. My fear is other hostile or aggressive regimes as well.
You know, it's interesting that our first president, George Washington, had the slogan "Peace through strength," which makes so much sense. You know, basically, the bullies of the world will not invade the perceived weaker countries of the world if they understand that there's strength, you know, against them and so forth. But on the other hand, weakness invites invasions.
That's right. It invites invasion to, you know, to certainly a weaker country like Ukraine or like, you know, Afghanistan is a complicated situation. But, you know, when you have weakened regimes and then a strong partner withdraws, it creates this vacuum, obviously. And so and the other real concern, major fear that we're seeing is not only is it a problem certainly for the Ukrainians themselves or for the Afghans themselves, but it also is, we're now sending a pretty clear message. America is sending a clear message to people that there really isn't much true ultimate benefit to being a friend of the United States, that we're not there for them whenever the chips Wow. are down, so to speak.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The one aspect of this story that perhaps is surprising some people, maybe even Putin himself. And by the way, let me go ahead and timestamp this. You and I are having this discussion in the year of our Lord, 2022, on Monday afternoon, on February 28th. And I say that because the story is one that changes all the time. But it seems as if after a few days of this invasion, the Russian momentum has been slowed down by the resilience of the Ukrainian people. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that seems to be one of the key aspects of this story as it develops.
Well, it certainly is, and I don't think it's a huge surprise for a lot of people to witness that, you know, the Ukrainians really for generations have been known as you know, a very formidable people, ethnicity. And so I think that's bearing itself out, you know. The good news, I guess, is there haven't really been that many opportunities over the last 50 or 60 years to see that demonstrated. But, you know, you're certainly seeing that now. But at the end of the day, just sheer volume and attrition is very difficult to sustain. So, you know, even when the will is incredibly strong, you know, eventually when ammunition runs out, when communication channels are weakened, it just becomes hard to sustain this. And so the question starts to become, how badly do the Russians want to occupy the Ukraine? So can they hold them out long enough? They can't hold them out indefinitely, but can they hold them out long enough to basically kind of frustrate Russia and then say, this is just not worth it?
Okay, now you say that the U.S. has a foreign policy nightmare on its hands in Ukraine. So my question is, how is it that the U.S. does have such a nightmare, you know, as opposed to that of the Ukrainian people, or maybe even as that of Putin and the Russians?
Well, so energy is obviously always one of the prevailing motivators around the planet for military and kind of ground movements. Okay, and so with large natural resource reserves in the Ukraine, if Russia is successful in not only occupying Ukraine but also then controlling those resources, that strengthens Russia obviously financially. But it strengthens Russia financially, but also strengthens Russia geopolitically, because other Central Asian and kind of former Eastern Bloc countries also rely on those same reserves and or pipelines running through the Ukraine. So they actually have the ability to kind of choke down an entire region of the world probably 16 or 18 other countries. Maybe not literally occupy them, but definitely influence them very strongly. So, it's more than just why does the United States, why should any given American care about, Ukrainians other than just kind of on a humanitarian level? We've heard a lot about the importance of energy independence for the United States. Yeah. Well, this is sort of the inverse of that. Russia's growing energy influence around the country actually weakens the United States' energy independence and makes us more interdependent or dependent on Russia and on the former Soviet bloc.
Yeah, and it's so sad, too, because President Trump really was starting to get us to be energy independent, and one of the first things Biden did when he became president was, shut down this pipeline and shut down that, all things in which American oil was being, drawn from the ground and then used. And all of this based really on the Green New Deal idea that, oh, we got to fight climate change, therefore we can't have fossil fuels. But we need fossil fuels. I mean, this program that you and I are having right now is run by electricity, and that electricity is run by fossil fuels. I got to this station by using a transportation by which I needed fossil fuels, and I'm sure you got to your location the same way. So bottom line is this whole Green New Deal is not even based on the correct premises, but I'd like you to unpack that if you would. There's really two or three questions there.
It is. So, the sort of clever wording of the Green New Deal and kind of around climate change writ large is a nicely packaged, well worded, but flawed premise.
Yeah.
that we absolutely want to be good stewards of creation broadly and of specific resources as we're all of us are trying to save and again just kind of steward these resources. But at the same time, ironically, I'm sure that you thought about this quite a bit. A lot of people that champion climate change don't think about the pollution and waste that's going on around the world in Africa and China and Southeast Asia, where there's like zero effort toward preserving resources. So globally, we're really not making much significant progress on kind of like the pure climate change, if you will, stewardship side of the equation. But the limited resources, large resources, but still ultimately limited, there is aggressive fighting, literally, like we're seeing right now, literal fighting happening to control or to direct those resources, be it the Middle East, offshore, things of this nature. So the climate change, we're really kind of shackling or hamstringing ourselves while the rest of the world is not playing by the same geopolitical or kind of politically correct rules.
And it's all based on questionable premises. And the questionable premise is catastrophic, man-made global warming a problem? And then if it is a problem, you know, are there viable solutions that wouldn't bankrupt us? And when they say that, yes, it's a problem, that itself is questionable. But then the next question is, you know, that basically the Paris climate controls, the Kyoto agreements, you know, all those kinds of things, essentially what it would do is we would have to spend money through the wazoo. It would bankrupt a lot of people. A lot of people would starve to death, quite frankly. And what would it accomplish at best? Oh, maybe reduce the temperature of the Earth by 1 degree centigrade in 100 years or at the end of the century. Oh, I mean, come on. This is crazy. Yeah. But people don't know about this. Now, in the meantime, going back to Putin and Russia and Ukraine, is there even a possibility that Putin could go nuclear? I mean, literally, in this particular scenario.
Well, first of all, I don't know that that would be necessary. I mean, the Ukrainians certainly have formidable forces and formidable artillery and transportation communication, but they. They're really no match for Russia proper. So I would be very surprised to see that just tactically. But then also, I think that also would, when you want to talk about having world political problems, Putin is aggressive, but he's not stupid. And I think that would jeopardize his entire leadership regime in Russia, which that would not be worth, you know, gaining the risk of simply gaining Ukraine. I think that would be kind of politically suicidal, if not maybe literally suicidal for President Putin. So I would be very surprised on the nuclear side, but unless there's intervention from another outside source, and I don't see that unfortunately happening, NATO forces are just not predisposed at this point to this level of kind of aggressive intervention. I think it's probably a matter of time, unfortunately.
We have about a minute and a half left. What is Putin's goal with Ukraine? Just gobble it up? Make it part of Russia now?
Well, I think that this would be the first large domino to fall in trying to reunite the former Soviet bloc. So the USSR, I think those Balkans, if you will, I think he's trying to regain those and kind of collect those under the new federation, right, of Russian control and influence. And frankly, once Ukraine is toppled, the next Balkans beyond that and former Soviet bloc republics really they're not very strong.
You're talking about like Lithuania
yes.
Okay, but now aren't those Estonia and so forth, aren't they now a part of NATO, which Ukraine never did become a part of NATO? We have about 45 seconds left.
They are, but I don't know that he sees NATO as a significant threat. So they are, he's going to call, I think, NATO's bluff on some of these things next.
Well, this is scary. How should we pray for this situation? 30 seconds.
Well, on the human level, obviously, certainly for the Christians in Ukraine, but
there are many, for everyone. Yeah.
So we need the Lord's intervention for the Ukrainians and all those in Central and Eastern Europe right now.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much for being with us, Tim Head. FFCoalition.com is the website for the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Tim Head, again, is the executive director. Thank you for your time, Tim. All the best.
Thank you, Jared.